This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Agri processes immigrant worker exploitation in Postville, Iowa, to its union busting in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, is hardly kosher.
On May 12, 2008, U.S. Immigrant and Customs Enforcement, ICE, arrested approximately 400 workers at the Agriprocessors, Inc. meat processing plant. For almost a week after the raid, hundreds of family members sought refuge at St. Bridget's Church. This and other raids are sweeping across the country, wreaking havoc on families and communities.
Father Paul Oderkirk, pastor of St. Bridget's Roman Catholic Church in Postville, Iowa, gained national recognition for his work with the families of the immigrants who were arrested and spoke to us during a recent trip to New York City.
Postville is in northeast Iowa. It's a town of 2,400 people from German, Irish, Norwegian background. In 1987, a Hasidic Jewish family bought a plant there. It became the largest kosher plant in the United States. They had hired Mexicans in Guatemala. A lot of stories had been heard of how bad the working conditions were there in the plant, and the state was actually investigating the plant for safety violation when this raid took place. So the state looking into refusing to pay overtime. And then eventually, when all of this came out, it was a lot worse than people in town thought. Right now, there's 9,311 charges leveled against the plant for underage employment and safety violations. And there are other charges being prepared that have to do with no payment of overtime or shortchanging overtime, no payment of vacation time. So it's revealed all of that. What people thought, now they know. And fast forwarding May 13th, the whole town was in chaos. I was in shock myself. They had arrested nearly 400 people. They prepared a little handbook for the judges and the attorneys. This is a handbook of how to find them all guilty. And you had the case of a judge talking to a Guatemalan, and the man said, "I'm only a worker. I only came here to work. I've never done any harm to anybody." The judge wanted to let him off. The handbook said he couldn't. The access of most of our workers to attorneys was practically zilch. They had very little hope of doing much by way of getting legal representation. The people that were left after the raid had flocked to our small church, and they filled up the church and the hall. We at that time had a basic staff of about five. Only two of us were bilingual. I work with Paul Real, who was hired as Hispanic ministry in that little parish. Paul informed me that after the raid, people charged over to the church and they brought their children. The raid had taken 400 people. 900 ICE agents came into town, two helicopters, vans, and buses, surrounded the plant and began to chain people. They chained them around the waist, arms, and their leg. Everybody, the women, everybody. They had to find people because people were hiding. And one of the young men that they dragged out was so scared. He was up against the wall, and they told him to do things, and he didn't. They pushed him into the wall. They turned him around, pushed him into the wall, and broke his nose. When he fell to the floor, they kicked him. When they got them all shackled, they put him on buses and hauled him out of town. So with these people that they took a sixth of the town, half of our parish, and a third of the school system, because some of the parents had children in school who were working at the plant, underage workers. We later discovered 57 of them, to be exact. When I got there and I saw these people in the church and began to understand what had happened, they were so frightened. The thinking was, they're going to come to our apartments. We can't go to our apartments. They took our husbands, our fathers, our uncles. We need a safe place to stay. And they were only in our church a couple of days when we began to get the email threatening us because we were offering sanctuary, that we would lose our tax status as a church. We sat down and talked about it. Should we be concerned about this? And Sister Mary McCauley, our administrator, said no, because our purpose from the very beginning is to do three things: to be in solidarity with the workers, to advocate for complete and total change of immigration law. The third thing was help people, be there for them, provide for them any way we could. We figure that we spend an average of $80,000 a month to help them with food. We do everything, including the doctor bills. How much did it cost to do this raid? Only recently did we learn. Between $5 and $9 million. They imprisoned 250 people, and not all men. We have a couple of mothers that are in prison. The cost of maintaining all those who were in prison was $590,000 a month. Now you add that to the amount they were spending on just the raid. Surely we can do better. A brief summary of what happened month by month. You heard May. June, because of the people that didn't want to go home, we had to convince them, you must go back to your apartment. If we can assure you that immigration will not come into your apartments and raid them, will you go back? Because we needed the church for services on the weekend. And finally, after 6 days, Saturday, they did go back. But June then became a month of trying to coordinate what we were doing. Five of us had then grown to nine. We got the help of members from a local college nearby. June then, we began to coordinate things, and we decided from the very beginning we need a disaster coordinator. So the Diocese of Dubuque provided us with a lady who turned out to be a gem, because we knew that we could not survive without volunteers. Since May 12th to today, coming every day, doing everything from driving people to different locations, to taking people to the doctor, answering the phones, and even just helping us. We don't have time to cook. But that was June, getting things coordinated, trying to plug the dike. And then came, on the 26th of June, a congressional caucus came, led by Congressman Luis Gutierrez from Chicago. And they had the first ever hearing of the stories of the women, the mothers that were left, and some of the men, of what happened to them when they were working. I can't go into that because I can't handle it. Suffice it to know that now we realize that we were facing dangers on two sides. You had the migra, immigration on one hand, and the owners of the plant. And what came out is how they mistreated the women and abused them, how they beat men. They put masking tape around a man's face and struck him with a meat hook, and things that we found hard to believe ourselves. But we were hearing it from the testimony of the congressman. On the 27th, we had a peace walk, well over 2,000 people. It was to get the story out, you know, to get more publicity, and frankly, to get more funds, because while people were generous, the amount we were spending was way beyond what we could have kept on with ourselves. Even though there was generosity on the part of the Lutheran Church and the Diocese of Dubuque, it was the small little amounts that came in, 100 here, 50 there, and so on, with letters and notes saying, we know that you're facing this extreme necessity. Here, accept this money. I'm a single mother. I'll send you $100. That's all I can give. By that time, we began to assign tasks. Different people would be assigned what to do. We had one who, all she does, even today, she tracks all the prisons where the men are kept. I think there's a general impression that since they were arrested in May and sentenced to 5 months in prison in lieu of 5 years in jail for identity theft, they would all be released. Yeah, believe it. They're not all released. There's a minority have been released, maybe as little as 50 to 60, and some deported, some coming back to Postville. Well, the family that owns the plant is the Rubashkin Hasidic Jewish family, whose hometown happens to be right here in your fair city. And so we began then having to negotiate with them, because all these people that were detained were owed checks. How are they going to get the checks? Once they got the checks, since they are in jail, how would they be carried? We worked our way out of that. September, we asked for a meeting with plant representative. We never got it. We asked for a $100,000 grant from them to help us with feeding people. We never got it. They weren't serious about to build up communication between the plant and what was happening amongst the families left. And so then came October. I think what happened put a sword of Damocles over the owners of the plant. And they still refuse to see it. And when that sword falls, it's not only going to cut the plant in two, it's going to destroy the city. In October, Rigoberta Menchu came from Guatemala. And I thought to myself, as she sat there and talked to us, here this woman travels from thousands of miles to come and talk to us and talk to the women, and neither of our state senators have been there. Unconscionable. And then I thought, isn't it tragic that the immigration law was swept under Homeland Security law in 2003, and it has been most horrible since then. It's the worst thing ever done, as far as I can see, with the immigration. Well, there hasn't been any kind of reform that amounts to anything. So November became the month of threats. I still can't believe this. It's happening, even as I'm talking to you now. As we work with the women and we ask them, would you go home if your husband was released and deported? Some say yes, some say no. One instance, the woman is Mexican. She has four children. They're all U.S. citizens, she said. And by the way, her husband was just recently deported. Do I follow my husband and have an uncertain future for my children because we have no home back there? We have no future there. My children have never been there. So do I follow him or do I stay here? And they are citizens. They have a future. She said, I'm going to stay. She comes frequently to tell us of her pain. And the latest threat was this. The immigration offices, mostly the ones we're dealing with, are out of Omaha, Nebraska, were asking us to provide transportation for all the women who needed their ankle bracelets recharged to Des Moines, Iowa, where they could be recharged. If, for instance, they wanted someone's fingerprints, we would transport them to Des Moines. It's a 4.5-hour one-way trip. We finally decided this was merely an extension of the work they should be doing. We called them up and said, we're not going to do this anymore. This is your work. We are not extensions of your office. We're not going to do it anymore. A couple of days before I left to come here, we learned that he was calling other people on our staff, saying, if we don't continue to do that, they're going to come to Postville, search out the woman who needs the ankle bracelet restored, and they're going to deport her. Paul then phoned him 4 or 5 times, and he got no answer at all, because the answer that we would have had for him was more or less, if you want to do that, that's fine, but the day you drive into town, you're going to be facing the media. I'll end with this. I made this up myself. 5 indelible, inhuman qualities and actions that have become a mark upon all of us in Postville. And when I say all of us, I even include a lot of the Postville residents who before the raid would say something like this. Well, we have a lot of illegal residents. Maybe, you know, they should be deported. But then the way it happened, a military style, the extent of it, those same people are changing and saying, you can't treat people this way. This is inhuman. So the first thing is the severity of the raid. They chained women. They chained one woman and did not believe that she had 2 dependent children at home. Those that said they did, they left in town with these ankle monitors on. They didn't put one on her. They put her in jail. And they put her in jail in the detention center that they had used to try all of these people. And when they finally listened to her, she was only there maybe 3 days. And she came back and I interviewed her in our office. And she said, Father, they're never going to do this to me again. The next day she disappeared. We don't know where. Because whatever happened to her in that jail was so traumatizing to her that she took her children and disappeared. So the first thing was the severity of the raid. They didn't listen to this particular woman. A lot of other people they didn't listen to. And the extent of the cruelty. It extended down into the area where they had set the courts. The courts were set up in a cattle congress in a huge building that they sometimes use during the year for animals. And ICE policemen did refer to people on a couple of occasions as animals. Second quality that marked us is it was done in a militaristic style. So they needed 2 ICE agents with flak jackets and machine guns to assist 400 people out. 900? That's more than 2 to a single person that they arrested. The militaristic style of it was so shocking that we still shake our heads in disbelief. Third, the cost. Told you something about that. Fourth, it was all built on lies. They lied about the reason why they were renting the cattle congress. They said it was just an exercise in national security in case something in the area should happen. And they set up courts in this cattle congress. They kept the media away by lying about why they were even there. And then in a day and a half, they charged those 400 people, most of them with stealing identities. And if you have been reading, you realize, of all the charges, they only found 2 guys that had IDs from other people. Most of the others, especially the Guatemalans, had made up numbers. They didn't realize the purpose of these numbers. They had no understanding of about Social Security cards. That whole thing was built on lies. What the workers are telling us, it fits into all of this. Right about the time of the raid, was the plant was providing the means for them for $220 to buy new papers. They were telling them, if you buy this new ID card and this new form and sign it, you'll be legal. Just recently, they released 10 of the underage workers they had detained. So ostensibly, they would be witnesses at the trial, and they would be trying to get their work permit. They released them all at once on a Sunday, and they came back to the house that we do not staff on Sunday. They didn't tell us they were going to do this. And all of a sudden, they literally dumped 10 more people on the town that needed everything. I talked to one young man. He had a pair of jeans on, and both knees were wore out. And I said, don't you have better clothes? He said, Father, this is all I have. It's the clothes they arrested him with. And this was months later. When they released all of the guys, they had no food, and the only clothes they had was what they had on when they were arrested. And also, there were five of them, and between the five of them, they had one toothbrush. They were all taking turns using it. Now, it would have been very nice if we could have gotten a phone call. These 10 are going to come up. We didn't get any phone call. We didn't get any notices. I mean, how far does this go? How far can you go with things like that? I'll have to stop there, except to share with you one thing that Rigoberta Manchu said. She shared about herself, and she then talked to the ladies that had monitors. And then she said she understood that there were a lot of unjust, illegal actions being taken in this country by the immigration authorities on poor people like this. But she said, Postville has a deeper problem. It is a pressure cooker of many injustices committed and covered up until they exploded. We're still supporting people and wondering when it will all end, because every week something else seems to explode to cause us trauma. And we're at the point we don't want anymore. We can't stand anymore. In the plant, that's in Chapter 11 bankruptcy. They're trying desperately to keep it open. Right now they have a small poultry line open. The effects on the town. If you drive down the main street, you'll see today the largest restaurant in town is on the verge of closing. The bakery's for sale. There's a Guatemalan store that's going under. Right down the line, the businesses are staggering, and the latest information is really, really sad. We have a small but very important co-op in town. The plant owes them about $300,000 that they have not paid. And just out of town, there's a feed company that they owe hundreds of thousands of dollars to. If those two companies go under, it's going to be a major blow to the city. I'd say a crucial blow. So I ask you to get involved in immigration work. We all need to flood our congressional phones with protests to address that particular problem. Obama says this is a new change coming. Well, by golly, we got to be part of it. We got to get the phone number of our local senators and representatives, and don't spend a day without calling them and telling them, get on this and get on it immediately. Change starts now. Extend yourself and be on the front line, be a spokesperson, and don't be afraid. When my bishop tells me to shut up, I just talk a little louder, that's all. The address for where you can send donations, it's Hispanic Ministry, St. Bridget, B-R-I-D-G-E-T, P.O. Box 369, Postville, Iowa, 52162. P.O. Box 369, Postville, Iowa, 52162. Thank you.
Continuing our look at agriprocessors, this time in our own backyard. In 2005, workers at the agriprocessors warehouse in New York City voted to unionize. The Rabushkin family, owners of agriprocessors, refused to recognize the union, ironically alleging some of its workers were undocumented.
Ha, a likely story. Outrageous. But despite three rounds of judicial rulings that agriprocessors must recognize the union, the Rabushkin family continues to flaunt the law and super exploit its workers. Yep, union busting, it's disgusting, and it certainly isn't kosher. We're joined by David Young, Organizing Director of Local 342, United Food and Commercial Workers. It is disgusting, isn't it, David?
Yes, it is, and it is true.
Now,
very true.
Sunset Park, tell us what actually has been happening there and what agriprocessors has been doing.
Our organizing drive began in mid to late summer of 2005. The workers there voted to join UFCW Local 342. The vote was 15-5, and they were all very excited. I'll never forget the day that they won, and looking forward to having a future and a contract that guaranteed them rights that they could only have dreamt of having before that. And then the company decided that they shouldn't have a union, that they shouldn't belong to a union and that they shouldn't have had the right to vote in the first place because they were undocumented immigrants, that 17 of them, they all of a sudden discovered, were undocumented. Whether the people are supposed to be in the country or not is not the concern. The concern is that the company employed them. So the company is charged with following the law of not employing people who don't have proper papers. If the company employs them, then they have a right to belong to a union, same as any citizen of the United States. Their contention was against the direct ruling from the Supreme Court to that same effect, which is the famous Shertan decision, which says that an employee is an employee is an employee, regardless of their immigration status. As long as they're employed by an employer, they have the right to join a union. And their argument was that they shouldn't have had the right to vote to join in the first place because they were undocumented. We filed our charges. We won the first round. They refused to comply. We were talking about 25 workers altogether. It's a distribution center in Sunset Park where the products from Iowa come into New York, this distribution warehouse, and then they're sent out with trucks to the delis, the supermarkets, and other warehouses that purchase their items.
And this is the largest kosher plant in the country.
Agri-Processors in Iowa was the largest kosher production plant in the country. Now it's not. It's now Alley Processing in Queens.
So are any food coming in from the Iowa plant now? I just thought it was closed.
I was by there not too long ago, and it was a lot slower than it was. You don't see hardly as many workers out there as you did at one time. I'm guessing that their volume is dramatically reduced, and you can tell because my local also represents the supermarkets that sell the various products in the stores. You don't see their products on the shelves.
So the court case, the workers voted in what year, and how long is it taking now before they get a union?
The workers voted in 2005, then the National Labor Relations Board issued a 10J, a bargaining order against them. It's a demand that the company bargain a contract with the union to represent the employees. They ignored that, along with their contention that there shouldn't have been a vote in the first place, and they appealed. And they've lost consecutive decision after decision, and they appealed it all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court decided not to hear the case and deferred to the ruling for the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which said that the Labor Board decision recognized the results of the election was valid, and that they have to bargain with us. And we have sent their attorney our letter demanding that the bargaining process begin.
What kind of wages and what kind of working conditions are we talking about in the Sunset Park, Brooklyn plant?
At the time of the organizing drive, it was pretty abysmal. I mean, you're talking $6.50, $7.10. The highest wage person at the time that I recall was $8 an hour. But the majority of them were between $6.50 and $7 an hour. They weren't getting paid appropriate overtime. They were not getting any type of medical coverage whatsoever, any paid holidays, personal days, sick time, vacation leave. The safety conditions in the facility were atrocious. They were forced to work in freezers with unsafe equipment and without protective gear for long hours at a time. And this is right in New York City where this type of thing shouldn't be happening.
And the Rubushkin family, as far as I understand, two of the family are under indictment and one has left the country and the company's under bankruptcy. Bring us up to date.
Well, the latest that I had heard myself is that Moshe Rubushkin, one of the sons, and Shalom were both indicted. And I believe Shalom Rubushkin was just remanded and he was denied bail for his recent wire fraud and
could you explain how does the wire fraud and money laundering tie into this, Dave?
As they started having financial troubles, according to what I've read in the papers and information I've gotten from people familiar, is that when they started having financial trouble after the raids, they sought out a bank in St. Louis, I believe it might have been the First National Bank in St. Louis, and secured a $35 million loan to help them get their production back online. But apparently, according to reports, they didn't use that money for that purpose. They rerouted it to various businesses and charities in the Postville area to launder the money so that he could take it back, is what I've read in the paper. And I guess the FBI must have found something similar to that because they have indicted him, and now he's currently behind bars for that.
That sounds like a perfect RICO case.
Yeah.
So where do things stand now in the workers?
Yes.
It's kind of languishing now. Are the same workers still there? What is to be done?
Well, the workers that were working there, to my knowledge, the ones that were part of our bargaining unit, are no longer there. Some of them have left the country and others have disappeared into various other parts of New York City working other places. We haven't had any real contact with them over the last year or so because they've disappeared in the city, that they don't work for Agri-Processor anymore. They hired new people and they hired undocumented immigrants again.
So That's does correct. That mean the UFCW is back there trying to organize the distribution site?
We don't have to organize them currently because we have a bargaining order that stands from the National Labor Relations Board. So we will seek to bargain with AgriProcessor over that distribution warehouse, and any current employees that are there that would fall into our defined bargaining unit would then become members of Local 342.
And the conditions that you described to us before, is this significantly worse than the conditions of other unorganized distribution centers?
I wish I could say it was significantly worse, but it is very common that people that work in the meatpacking industry and warehouses and factories that have no union representation in general all across the country face many of the same problems that these workers at AgriProcessor faced, including the situations that have gone on in Postville. The only reason that people are so alarmed about what's going on there is because of the extensive reporting that's been going on about it. These types of things happen to people every day. And right in Queens, at another factory that we were organizing recently, a company called Alley Processing, which is actually now the largest kosher meat producer in the country since Agri's downfall, workers there were complaining to us about safety violations and many things themselves. In one instance, a worker actually got his finger cut off by a machine that was working improperly. And then when he went to get it treated and told the boss he cut his finger off, they told him that once he was cleared to come back to work by the doctor, then he would have a 2-week suspension because he didn't use the machine properly.
Oh, my God.
And he's still serving the suspension as we speak. I don't know. He might have actually gone back to work.
He got his finger cut off, so he goes through a 2-week suspension.
That's correct. And they wouldn't even drive him to the doctor.
Upton Sinclair had nothing on these companies, huh? Well, sure as heck ain't kosher.
Yes, and it has nothing to do with just kosher. It's a non-union company in general. And AgriProcessor's large argument was that people are coming after us because it's kosher and they're angry at the kosher business, which is completely not true.
Oh, I was just using kosher metaphorically.
Oh, yes. No,
absolutely,
I know,
that's clear.
You touched on a good point because one of their arguments within the Jewish community was that the unions are coming after us and it's the union's fault and this and that. But the unions didn't raid Postville. The federal government did. The unions didn't tell them to steal from their employees. They did that themselves. The unions had nothing to do with that.
Well, we're going to leave it there and continue to watch as Local 342, UFCW, continues to do the organizing that must be done, because the only thing really that can protect workers is when they organize to represent their own needs and interests. And
that's right.
Dave Young, Organizing Director, Local 342, thank you. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash, reminding you to log on to our new website, www.buildingbridgesradio.org.